This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Haney. Today's program is recorded, so we won't be able to take your calls or emails this afternoon. Coming up on today's show, we talk with Cliff Ravenscraft, the podcast answer man, about his 10 years as a professional podcaster. But first, most of us are familiar with the phrase pursuit of happiness, and many of us spend our lives searching for happiness without much luck. J.V. Galindo is a professor of philosophy, humanities, and psychology at John F. Kennedy University and De Anza College. His book is Authentic Happiness and Seven Emails, A Philosopher's Guide to the Psychology of Joy, Satisfaction, and a Meaningful Life. And J.V., thanks for joining us today.
No, thanks for having me.
How do you define happiness? Is this about positive thinking? Is it about having a positive attitude, that kind of thing?
Well, you know, that's a fantastic question, because I think a lot of people's issue with unhappiness is the result of not really understanding what happiness actually is. What I talk about a lot in my classes and in my book is the idea that because of culture, because of the way we grow up, a lot of us associate happiness with purely positive emotions, or they associate happiness with simply being feeling good. And as a result, they do things or they pursue habits in a way that only gives them temporary boosts of pleasure or momentary feelings of elation rather than long-term, long-lasting, deep satisfaction with their lives. So one of the first things I do in my lectures and in the book is to describe a more practical and more common sense approach to happiness that people don't often think about. For one, happiness, obviously, is, to some extent, feeling good or feeling better or alleviating pain and suffering. So in some sense, it's related to feelings, but we say we're happy not just when we feel good. In fact, sometimes we can feel miserable and we'll still say we're happy if what we're doing is meaningful and purposeful. So meaning and purposeful activity is also a part of happiness. Maybe one other component is the idea of satisfaction, the idea of gratification with one's life. So, for instance, you've probably read a book, and after reading the book, you felt great satisfaction with reading the book, but you may not have had that emotional high that you might have gotten with eating apple pie or with getting the new car, but you still feel happy because of what you've done. You feel gratified with the activity. So those various components all, what I think, define what a happy life is. And it's much more than just feeling a certain way.
So you've written a book about happiness. You teach a course on it. Do a lot of the students take your course?
Those that are interested in happiness, sure.
What kind of reaction do they have when they're taking this course?
It's usually a very eye-opening subject matter for them, because we cover lots of psychological research that deal with human happiness. That comes from the field referred to as positive psychology. And what they realize is that happiness is so much more than what they thought, and in some ways so much simpler to attain than what they thought. A lot of the reason why I think people don't often look into pursuing a course on happiness or enrolling in a course on happiness, because it seems obvious what happiness is, right? You go get something, you go buy something, you go pursue something you want, and you attain happiness that way. And what they realize through the research studies we look at is that happiness is much more of a choice. Happiness is much more of how you decide to look at your life, how you decide to look at yourself, how you decide to use your time, the sorts of activities you choose to participate in, the types of thoughts you choose to occupy your mind with. And in some sense, it's very liberating to know that happiness isn't something you have to pursue, and that happiness is something you can just choose for yourself. On the other hand, it means the responsibility for your own happiness is on us as individuals, and we can't blame the environment. We can't blame stuff that's happening to us or things that we don't have as the reason for unhappiness. So students come away with both those emotions, feeling liberated that it's their choice and feeling, oh my goodness, I have to choose it myself. It's my fault.
So I take it then the idea of the pursuit of happiness is a misperception. You probably agree with Abraham Lincoln when he said people are about as happy as they make up their minds to be.
Absolutely. Though people do pursue it. So it's not as if the pursuit doesn't occur. So, I think the idea is that pursuing happiness is a misnomer that we kind of learn through our culture. If we take a look at what we're bombarded with as popular culture, we see all these images and narratives that say, you know, you would be so much happier if you had this in your life, whether it's the car or the right deodorant or the right type of job. Or you see this in films and songs, you hear them in songs where you're taught that, you know, happiness is defining the right person, happiness is getting the right lifestyle. So we're kind of ingrained, it's kind of ingrained in us to think that happiness is something to pursue. In fact, pursuing it can often be a detriment to happiness. Because if you're pursuing happiness, then it's as if you're not happy now. And when you do get what you want, then you'll continue to pursue it because you think there's always more to be had out there. And that continual state of dissatisfaction, always pursuing and chasing after happiness, is as much a contributor to unhappiness than anything else.
Do you think this is one of those universal subjects, JV, that so many of us are trying to find happiness and meaning that we're captivated by this topic?
I think it should be, and I think in some sense it is. I think, though, just like I mentioned a second ago, that we're kind of deceiving ourselves. A lot of us are deceiving ourselves on what happiness is and how to attain it, that we don't often think critically about our own happiness. But for sure, I think everybody's modus operandi, to some extent, is to live a happier life. And whether they say that to themselves or not is the question. If they do say it to themselves, then hopefully they become curious about the subject and delve deeper into it, learning about what research has said and what wise teachers have said in the past. But oftentimes people don't ask those questions because they just take it for granted. Oh, I know what happiness is. It's getting this new promotion, or it's finding the right spouse, and you don't have to tell me what it is. So they don't really think critically about it, which means they don't really look for a more optimal approach to authentic happiness.
Well, how much is our happiness dependent on our genetics, our circumstances, our actions? I think in the book you actually had a formula that dealt with that, didn't you?
Yeah, what's interesting was that, culturally we have this propensity to go look outside of ourselves for happiness, and a bunch of psychologists got together to look at the research to see if that's really the optimal approach. Is happiness really something we have to go get outside of ourselves? Is it really a matter of our circumstances, right, our external conditions? And what they found by looking through the research was that when you try to decipher what elements of living life contribute to happiness, there are basically three, kind of like what you already mentioned. There are our genetics, meaning based off the genes we inherit from mom and dad. Some of us may have a propensity to worry more than others, or be more fearful than others, or have a more optimistic attitude, or be more cheerful. They also found that the circumstances of our lives definitely have some role to play in our levels of happiness. But in addition to both of those are our choices, are our voluntary activities, which means what we choose to do with ourselves, how we choose to look at our own lives. So with those three components, they looked at the data and found out that only about 10% of our long-term happiness is really based upon our circumstances, which is surprising to a lot of people because that's kind of what they thought of as being happiness, getting something or changing something outside of ourselves. But only 10% of our happiness is a result of that. What they also found out was that about 40%, 50% of our long-term happiness is the result of genetics. That, too, scares a lot of people because they can think about their own family and their own parents, and they get freaked out, saying, oh, my goodness, I'm trapped in this sort of ancestral line of unhappiness. But what I tell my students is to focus on the remainder of the equation, which says that happiness is also the result of your voluntary actions, which plays about a 40% role in your long-term happiness, which means a large percentage of how happy you are is based upon how you choose to deal with adversity, how you choose to look at your life when things don't go so well. What sorts of activities do you fill your day with? Are you choosing things that give you joy and meaning and gratification, or are you choosing things that are just purely for the pursuit of looking good and showing off to your neighbors you know, fitting your life into the mold that culture tells you to fit it in. So that equation is pretty, for me, it seems pretty empowering to know that a large portion of my happiness is a result of what I do rather than what happens to me.
You know, I always find this baffling, though, JB, that, you know, we live in an advanced culture. We have so many technological conveniences at our fingertips. And yet, you know, it seems like people, they just aren't happy.
I was going to say it's funny, but it's better to say it's interesting to note that when scientists, researchers look at indigenous cultures, or they'll do studies with people that live in more rural areas or in more modest settings, that we often find them to be less stressed than us. We often find them to be as happy, if not happier, than those of us in the more technologically advanced world. And that seems to go against common sense, because they have no access to medicine. They have no access to emergency care. They have one bad storm, one bad flu season could completely devastate them. Yet their level of happiness and their levels of stress are comparable, if not better, than ours lots of the time. And I think one of the reasons is that we have so many expectations placed upon us. As we grow up, we learn that life is supposed to be so many things. We need to have this type of house. We need to have this type of relationship. We need to have this type of job. We need to have these types of things in our possession. We need to be a certain type of person. And we can even look at our technology, and we have so many expectations about how it's supposed to work. We get upset when our air conditioner goes on the fritz, or our computer freezes, or when our doctor is a little bit slow in meeting with us, or when. So all these things that we have that we think are as advantages are things that can cause us to stress and to be unhappy, because sometimes they fall beneath our expectations, or sometimes we fall beneath the expectations we place on ourselves. So even though we're technology advanced, that also means there's so many more stressors out there, so many more things that can cause us to be unhappy. That's what I think is the irony of it all.
Yeah, more people seem to be turning to things like yoga and meditation and quiet sitting. What do you think of these as tools for becoming happy?
Yeah, I think they're fantastic. One of the major issues with our unhappiness, or one of the major things that prevent us from being happy, is our own thoughts. If you take a look at, if somebody just decides to do a survey or experiment, what they can do is monitor their day. Be aware of what happens in your day. And what you might notice is that the majority of the time you're unhappy, it's usually not because something has happened. It's usually not because something that you don't want to occur occurred. It's usually because we get caught up in our own negative thoughts. We get caught up in thinking about things that could happen tomorrow or that could happen later that we don't want to happen, and we worry about that. Or we get caught up in stuff that happened yesterday or weeks before or even years before that we regret and we wish didn't happen. And oftentimes those negative thoughts and negative memories we bring up are the cause of our own unhappiness. So as a result, it's hard for us to escape it because they're our thoughts. Things like meditation and yoga or any sort of focusing practices or mindfulness practices kind of develop that muscle, that mental muscle that allows us to choose the contents of our awareness that are there to help us strengthen our ability to focus our attention on what we want to pay attention to. So when negative thoughts arise, hopefully through these sorts of practices, we can decide, hey, is this something that's worth thinking about right now? Is this something that's useful for me to contemplate? Or maybe would it be more useful to think about all the good stuff that could happen, or all the positive stuff that's happened in my life, or to plan for the future in an empowering way rather than just worry about all the negative pitfalls that might occur. So those sorts of practices, I think, are wonderful.
Yeah, you talked about mental exercise. Do you offer exercises in the book that people can do to help themselves feel happier?
Well, you know, in general, it talks about practicing awareness of one's contents in their minds. But on my website, www.jvgalindo.com, I actually have a free book of just pure exercises, pure practices that people can use to try to strengthen their ability to focus on what they want to focus to. I think there's over 37 exercises there that are used or that are designed to help people deal with the various different aspects of what it means to be happy. So not so much maybe in the Authentic Happiness book itself, but that free book online is accessible to anybody.
And the Authentic Happiness book, tell me about the format for the book. Why did you decide to write this as a series of emails?
Oh, that's a great question. I love telling the story. I teach a graduate course at John F. Kennedy University, literally called The Psychology of Happiness. And my plan was to write a textbook for the course because it was hard for me to find a textbook that covered the material that I like covering in the class in the way I like covering it. So I started writing this textbook in the summer of 2009, somewhere around there. And as I was writing the textbook, I started getting the sense that I don't think my students will enjoy reading this. I don't think any student really enjoys reading a textbook. So I had this idea one night that instead of writing a formal textbook, what if I made it simpler to read? What if I made it or changed it so that it's something that my students enjoy diving into? And as a result, I decided to use the format of emails. So the format of the book is an instructor gets a random inquiry from somebody interested in taking this course on the psychology of happiness. And as a result of that beginning inquiry, they start exchanging emails where the professor starts summarizing the key ideas from the course through these 7 emails. So my goal was to make the text accessible, to make some of these difficult psychological concepts really easy to understand, and maybe even more importantly, to condense these key ideas in a way that people can read it and then easily take action with them, easily see how they can start applying the concepts to their lives.
JV, happiness is a pretty wide subject. Was it tough to boil it down to 7 emails?
I think what was tough maybe was to boil it down to some basic concepts before deciding on the 7 emails. The idea with writing the emails was that each of my students at the end of my course is tasked with coming up with their personal own well-being guide, which means, hey, this is a course with lots of concepts. I know it's hard to remember it all, but I would like you to pick and choose a few key ideas that you do not want to forget, so that when you leave the course years down the line, you can review back to your personal guide and remind yourself of the ideas that you really wanted to remember. Now, I did the same thing for myself. I came up with my own personal guide based off the concepts we talked about in the course to help me go through life. And as a result, the 7 emails are really based upon my own personalized wellness guide. So the 7 emails, it was easy to come up with because I had 7 ideas already in mind for myself.
Have you ever had any heard from any of your students in the class or done any follow-up to find out if the concepts that you were teaching did take hold and to help them be happier?
I've had students in the past or students in the near present time send me emails every once in a while talking about how much they've enjoyed the course and how they've noticed slight changes in their perspective as a result of the course material that we covered together. So that makes me feel good.
So you think it's a case of people can force themselves to be happy or consciously think positively or do calming exercises to make themselves happier?
To some extent, I wouldn't say force per se. It's just like any other choice. Some choices are harder than others. One of the reasons why making the happiness choice can be so hard is because a lot of us don't really make conscious choices for ourselves. A lot of the times, we operate based off of habit or based off unconscious programming, and we don't even realize that we're not making conscious choices. I mean, you can even think about situations where you're stuck in traffic and you might just start yelling at somebody or might wave your fist, or maybe you see other people do this in the car next to you. oftentimes those aren't conscious choices. Oftentimes that's just them acting out unconsciously. And even basic routine types of activities like how you put your pants on in the morning or how you start brushing your teeth or how you go through your shower, a lot of those things we don't really think carefully about. We just do it just like we do every day without a second thought. So in the sense that breaking any sort of habit is difficult, in the sense that being more aware of the reasons why we do certain things is difficult, I mean, that's what makes choosing happiness difficult. But with practice, with perseverance, with motivation, anybody could learn to develop the skills necessary to make happiness itself a habit.
Do happier people live longer, JV, or do they have better, more satisfying lives as they reach their 70s and beyond?
Oh, this is another great question, because a lot of us have an inverse idea of the relationship between living well and health and achievement and happiness. So the common sense idea is, okay, you get what you want and you become happy. You get the money, you become happy. You find the right person in your life, you become happy. You fix your health and you become healthier and become happy. It turns out the reverse is actually true. If you are happier, you tend to be healthier. It actually helps you with your health. People that are happier tend to make more money as a result of them being happier. People who are happier tend to be able to more easily find relationships, because it's more easier for you to find somebody if you're in a cheerful mood than if you're, you know, not in one. So it's interesting that we're actually pursuing things backwards. We should actually, if you wanted the stuff, we wanted the relationships, we wanted the money, yeah, that's fine. I'm not going to judge anybody for it. But maybe the better way to approach it is, you know, deal with your happiness first. Make the choices that you need to make to live a more fulfilling, gratifying, pleasurable life first. And what you'll notice is that all these things that you desired prior will just naturally come to you. They will be, you're kind of like attracted to you because of your happiness.
What would be the one thing that you would recommend to someone as a start to being more happy? What's the starting point?
It kind of depends on what the root is of their unhappiness. But for the majority of people, as I mentioned before, it seems as if the root of their unhappiness is their own thoughts. Is being unable to escape the negativity that often plagues us because of stress and anxiety and all the stuff that we are bombarded with during our day. So any sort of mindfulness practice, maybe the most simple one, is to just take an hour or even less a day, and instead of unconsciously focusing on all the bad stuff that's happened to you during the day, which a lot of people do unconsciously, maybe spend some time thinking about all the good stuff. Spend some time thinking about all the positive things that had occurred, no matter how small. Spend some time being grateful for the things that are in your life. It could be as simple as the fact that you're able to breathe. It could be as simple as being grateful for a warm shower in the morning or a nice cup of coffee you had during breakfast, things that we often take for granted. And what happens is that if we can build up that sort of bias towards positivity, if we can build up our reserves of feeling good, it will help us when we're dealing with all the negative thoughts that unconsciously flood our awareness.
So being grateful for the small things can have a huge impact.
A huge impact, and people often overlook that. Studies out of UC Davis show how, you know, a simple gratitude practice, spending some time each day just reflecting on things that you're appreciative of, can have a tremendous impact on your overall well-being.
Well, JV, thank you so much for joining us today.
I really appreciate you guys having me.
JV Galindo, professor of philosophy, humanities, and psychology at John F. Kennedy University and De Anza College. He's the author of Authentic Happiness in 7 Emails, A Philosopher's Simple Guide to the Psychology of Joy, Satisfaction, and a Meaningful Life. Coming up, we'll learn how Chris Ravenscraft has turned himself into the podcast Answer Man. You're listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU.